Muffin Talk. Kia ora and welcome to Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is a weekly radio program to which I invite guests to talk about their work and their passion for issues on community programs, social justice, Bible studies, or the wider community. Today, I've invited Jennifer Ward Leyland to a Zoom recording for broadcast. Jennifer, a warm welcome and hi to my tour radio program.
Sure.
Jennifer Ward Leyland is a New Zealand actor who has worked extensively in theater, film, and television for over 40 years. In the 2007 New Year's Honours List, Jennifer was named an officer of the New Zealand Order of Merit for services to theatre and the community. In 2018, she was named SPADA Industry Champion. And in 2019 New Year's Honours List, she was named a Companion of the New Zealand Order of Merit for services to theatre, film and television. Then she was presented with the Woman of Influence Award for Arts and Culture. Jennifer was named as the KiwiBank New Zealander of the Year 2020. Congratulations, Jennifer. These are wonderful awards, an incredible career. Do you remember how it all started? How did your interest in theatre and acting start?
Absolutely, I remember. It's indelibly etched in my mind. My dad took me along when I was a seven-year-old to some rehearsals of a play called Oedipus. So I like to say I started with a very light Greek tragedy. My sister and I walked into that rehearsal room, and the actors were all just sitting around getting ready to work. And I knew in that moment I had an epiphany that this is where I belonged. And I loved doing that. And I went home and told Mum that I was going to be an actor. So I've known very clearly from the age of seven that this is what I wanted to pursue. I didn't know how, but I come from a family of musicians and lawyers. So there was very much an appreciation of the arts.
Oh, you're lucky. So your parents didn't say, no way.
No, not at all. Not at all. In fact, my dad would have probably, if there'd been the ability to have a career as an actor here back then, he probably would have been a professional actor.
Oh, okay. And so you have experience in TV and in drama and in feature film and theatre, a wide spectrum. Is there anything that after all these years you've liked best?
It's a really good question. Often the question I get asked is, do I like singing or acting better? And I'll answer that because it is sort of relevant to your first question. I consider a song is just like a monologue. It just obviously has the heightened nature of music underneath. But you still need all of the storytelling skills and great connection to the audience when you're singing, as if you're acting. So for me, whether it is on any type of production, I'm always really, you know, looking at the character and their journey. I would say I probably get my most satisfaction from the stage because I like being able to complete the full story in that one evening. Whereas when you're shooting a film or a television series, you're often doing things out of order. You know, you might be doing scenes from the last episode on your first day. So you really have to have a sense of where you've come from and where you're going to as a character. But I love the variety. I think in New Zealand you don't get pigeonholed. And that's really, really, really wonderful. So it means I've really had such a wide variety in my career. And long may that last. Like if you'd asked me 5 years ago, would I have been directing a short film, I probably would have laughed at you, but I did that last year. And if you said you'd be directing something in a television studio, I would have laughed at you, and I did that this year. So, you know, older and bolder, trying things, that's mostly what I'm interested in, is new, exciting experiences.
Yeah, there are several actors in the world who have been acting until the age of 90, so you have plenty of time.
Exactly.
I was also wondering, because when you talk about the theatre, because you have that connection to the public and the audience also, does it make a difference for you when you are acting, or do you completely cut out everything?
Oh, no, absolutely. I think it's quite an extraordinary thing that goes on in the actor's mind, is that you're completely focused on your emotional journey as a character, but that this other little sort of, you know, camera in your mind that's also scanning what the audience are doing, what the audience are feeling, what the other actors are doing, where, you know, you're holding the energy there. So it's like two equal parts of your brain are working at the same time. So I find that immensely satisfying.
Mm-hmm. And what about a highlight, something that you like thinking about? Where you, I'm sure that you have many highlights, but maybe you can pick out one.
I do. But I'll tell you one moment, and I wrote about this recently as a memory for Silo Theatre, because they're coming up for 20 years, I think it is, maybe 30 years. It was a production in 2005 called The Goat by Edward Albee, who at that time, you know, greatest American living playwright. And it was the most magnificent role. I'm very fond of parts that are kind of black comedy, because often at our most emotionally distraught or exposed, in these situations, some of the darkest and funniest things can come out. You know, they're very complex. And for an actor to be able to play those, to nail those comedy lines, but with all the depth of feeling underneath, is one of my favourite things to do. So if you'd said what kind of plays are my best, I would have said a black comedy. So it's got drama and comedy. And it makes you as an actor do... explore every facet of yourself. I feel like I'm really, really working. And comedies are very incisive things, but like surgery, you know, you have to be really deft with comedy. You're often fitting your next line in between an audience's laugh. So there's a real feeling of playing with the energy of the audience. I love that. And so anyway, in The Goat, my character actually... kills the goat off stage and drags it on stage. Anyway, at the very end of that season, which was magnificent and probably one of my favourite roles ever, I wrote to Edward Albee, thinking, of course, that my letter would go into the ether. You know, he'd never even see it. However, I was a couple of weeks later, I was driving out and picked up the mail from the box and was sitting in my car next to me. And at the lights, I sort of turned over my letters and went, oh, who's writing me a letter from New York? And there was a handwritten reply from Edward Albee, who's since died now, of course. So that would be, you know, after the family, the husband, the cat, that would probably be one thing I'd save in a fire.
Absolutely. Oh, that's wonderful. So it doesn't matter if you are writing from New Zealand, if it's the right thing in the letter, and I think that he would have appreciated that feedback from somebody who really enjoyed his play.
Yes, and he said that my letter to him was suitable for framing.
Oh, so it's both sides. So when he has to save his house, or would in the past, then he would have taken your letter.
Maybe, but he's probably got that letter sitting in all of his you know, all of his writings and. You know, memorandum and all of that memorabilia and all of that sort of stuff is probably at a university somewhere. So who knows? My letter might be there.
Yes. And Jennifer, you are also the president of Equity New Zealand, and you are a so-called intimacy coordinator. Mm. What is this? Can you tell us more about it?
Sure. So it's a rather new role, Beata. When I say new, probably in the last 4 years here in New Zealand, and probably only in about the last 6 years in the world. And it was really developed out of a need for people to have a more professional process around this aspect of our work, which for all actors, intimacy is a legitimate aspect of our work. So we never conflate it with sexual harassment. It's, you know, it's a part of our work. But we have to be much more mindful of how that affects our people. And our statistics generally, mental health statistics for performers are very poor. They're 4 times worse than the general population. Mm. Having said that, we've got an off-the-chart amount of hope, so go figure. That's an interesting conundrum, isn't it? But we have, for many, many years, our union had heard and gosh, every second actor I speak to has had either an unpleasant or a dangerous or an uncomfortable situation performing intimacy. Now, sometimes it's because some direct abuse has happened, and sometimes it's because there was no proper communication and discussion around the work. You know, the actors are told to get on with it and come up with something that they're happy with, which is a situation that can be very uncomfortable for actors. So the intimacy coordinator puts in, if you think of us more like a stunt coordinator, we go in and break down the physical beats of the moment, like you would a stunt, and then the emotional beats, and we put those together. But we use, obviously, a third party with the intimacy. I'll call it IC for short. That means that we are not leaving the actors to look after each other, because that's not their job. We are making sure that there is consent. That's probably the three tenets of our work: communication, transparency, and consent. Make sure everybody knows what they're doing, everybody knows what they're up for, everybody agrees where they're being touched. And, you know, everybody has boundaries on their body. We carry things as people for many years. And it might just be that somebody doesn't want to be touched on a certain part of their neck, but the other part is fine, you know? So we find other creative routes to create everything that we need to in a scene while still giving some autonomy to the actors. So it's been a game changer for actors.
So you would have to communicate very well first with the actors to know where their boundaries are.
Absolutely. So before I even meet them, I have a catch-up, check-in conversation to see how they're feeling about the work, if they're comfortable about the idea of it, anything that I need to know, whether they've worked with an intimacy coordinator before. I do a breakdown of all of the scenes and all the intimate content, so it's all there in black and white for the producers to see, and who I've talked to, and their feelings about it. And also, if they're, you know, wearing a particular costume or no costume, you know, what modesty barriers we might need to put in place and all sorts of that stuff. So, you know, a lot of the job is disseminating information, but of course there is also choreographing the intimate moments, which, you know, you want to do with full consent.
You're like a kind of safeguarding person. You're outside, and you're neither the actress nor are you the producer. So you have no interest in certain passages, but you can see, okay, this is what the actor agreed with, and just to check if the respect is there. Is that the role?
Yeah, it's more that I'm there on the set to ensure that the work goes professionally and safely. As you said, yes, there is a safeguarding aspect to it. I'm not like a health and safety officer. I'm not there to police the crew. Having said that, we must remember, given our very poor statistics around sexual abuse in this country, that one in three people will have been affected by some sort of trauma in their life. And that's, so you can be sure that between yourself, your cast, and your crew, it's not just a possibility that people will be dealing with it, it's a certainty. So just having that in mind means that we all start with very clear speech to the crew. The first assistant would say, we're doing some intimacy work. If you don't need to be here, please leave the room. You know, so we're just giving respect to the moment. It really is about professional respect when you boil it all down. But my job there is to absolutely be looking at the intimate work only and how the actors are dealing with that.
So one more thing.
And making sure that the director's vision is being realised.
So you would find also, you might suggest an alternative if something is not working the way that the actor is comfortable with, then you would talk to the producer and say, well, you could change this and this, and it would still be fine. And so you would go from that kind of understanding, so that the producer understands and
yes,
is aware of it.
Indeed. You know, we kind of use the adage, a yes is a yes, a no is a no, and a maybe is a no. Mm-hmm. So we're working on the fully 100% positive yes zone. And it does also mean that we can sometimes get away from the sort of tropes of intimacy that we often see on television and create a more interesting creative path that will still create the exact same feeling, as just physically might be in a, you know, we've taken a different path in the creation of it.
And how has been the reaction so far by the actors and the producers?
They love it. They absolutely love it. And I think in New Zealand we're very lucky because we've got a small population and we're quite nimble at taking on change. This work has absolutely spread throughout the industry very quickly. I think about my poor colleagues overseas who might be the only intimacy coordinator in Israel or the only intimacy coordinator in Spain, you know, and they're up against years of machismo. You know, and you know, a much harder road to convince, you know, producers that this is necessary. But that's the other part of the job, is we get feedback from the actors. We make sure that the producers have got paperwork to say, you know, these protocols were followed correctly. Checked back in with the actors afterwards. Here's the feedback, and it's remarkably comforting for them as well. For the producers, you know, I don't know many producers who don't want to have a safe set. It's good for everybody.
And it's a good it's good for the reputation, definitely. Have you ever had somebody like an actor saying, oh, I've never known that I could say no?
Oh, all the time.
All the time.
Yes, I've had, in fact, some people can get very wobbly during the process because they realize that no one has ever asked for their consent.
Oh.
Yeah.
How detailed are the preparation? Like, can you tell us a little bit through when an actor gets a job or a role and how is the process?
Sure. So, for me, I get the script, I break it down, I look at the intimate moments, I find out who the casting is, I talk to the director, I find out what he or she or they want for the scene, and then I ring the actors individually and talk through that content and get a feel for their feelings around it. And that might be everything from I'm totally comfortable to I'm feeling really nervous about it, I've never done intimate work before, to I'm worried about my personal relationship and whether that's going to be affected, you know. So I'm, you know, I'm making myself available to if anybody else in their wider family needs to be talked through about this. But honestly, once they get a taste of just how professional the work is, yeah, people never go back. They just, just love it. So then I would, if we're lucky, we get to rehearse beforehand in a rehearsal space, and that means I get the actors connected with each other, and then they go through a consent process to say where is comfortable or not comfortable on their bodies, and then we look at the choreography of the scene, which I will have got from the director, and we put it together very slowly in a very technical way, and then just start adding all the layers. So by the end, the actors are doing what they do best, which is their acting, and not feeling like this is a something to just get through, and not feeling like they're in self-consciousness, because an actor doesn't want to bring their own sexuality to a scene. They want to bring the character's sexuality to the scene. And it's just, you know, weird if that line gets blurred. So I'm very clear about separating out character from self. And especially at the end of the scene, I will often take them through what I call a crafting out process, where they can leave their character behind and go home with a, you know, a much more settled spirit.
So that I think that is a great help for both sides, and I think for the production to take away that nervousness as you were describing for some people, because then they can put their energy in performing.
Yes, exactly. That's what they're there to do. They're not there to be sex workers.
Yeah. So is there anything that you would recommend to a young actor when they start acting and they don't know about any rules? Is there something that is written down, or is it, yeah, maybe?
Yes. So what I've been doing is going into the drama into the drama school. So I've been embedding this work in at the first level of training. So that's for Toi Whakaari in Wellington, the Actors Program, South Seas Film and Television School, and I'm going into another film school, I think, next month. So that's been a huge focus on me, for me, is to get these protocols out there to as many people as possible, to drama teachers, to amateur theatre companies, and I've been involved in three now, doing some seminars for amateur theatre companies. And they've, you know, several of them have just changed their processes completely and all feeling so much better for it. And, so the teaching part of it is a big thing for me. I think, you know, I'll die happy if I know that every actor in the country has got a practice that they could personally use in what could be an unsafe situation.
And so if there was an unsafe situation, is there a kind of helpline for the actors?
We certainly provide... the equity guidelines for intimate scenes on stage and screen, and that's on our website under resources, and that's equity.org.nz. So that's a whole guideline for the entire industry for stage and screen about how to handle these things best. And if an actor got into strife, I would like to think that they would either talk to someone in production, but of course the union's always there for those things as well. Mm. Yeah, and the police.
thank you very much for these explanations, because I think that's an area that is relatively new. And as you said, New Zealand is maybe one of the leaders in the world.
Yeah, we are.
So where did it start? Did it start in abroad or in New Zealand?
In the States, really. And I think it was an actress who had to do a lot of sexual content, perform a lot of sexual content, and the entire crew were men. And she just wanted somebody for herself to come in and work with her. And I think she got someone who was sort of more from a dance background, but that sort of role developed out of that. And actually, I'm heading to Australia end of next month to... work with two very well-known intimacy coordinators. So, you know, I'm continuing to train. I'm accredited now, but I always want to keep my training up, because, you know, it's still, if you'd asked me 6 years ago, would I be an accredited intimacy coordinator? I would have gone, what's that? So there we go. How times have changed. And but I did it because I wanted to make actors' lives better, and I saw what a clean and clear process this was, and how much more professional and what a difference that would make to, hopefully, to our statistics anyway.
Yeah. And Jennifer, one last question. What are your projects that you're working on at the moment? Can you say anything?
Of course, yes. So I'm currently intimacy coordinating on a Māori television show called Ahikarua, which is a bilingual drama series. So this is my third series on that. And then I'm also working on a comedy series called Homebound as intimacy coordinator, and on a play for Silo coming up. And then I'm doing quite a bit of teaching, craft of acting and stuff like that. So, I have to go to my blooming calendar to see what I'm doing. Oh, yes, and I'm directing a new Māori musical workshop. So, you know me, I've always got a lot of irons in the fire, Beata.
Oh, that's wonderful. So we'll see you in the theatre again and on television.
Yes, yes. I'm trying to think what I'll be on. Oh, I'm in the next My Life is Murder, so the next series of that, playing I won't tell you because it'll be a spoiler and I'm probably not allowed to tell you. But anyway, my husband directed that and I had a great role, which I loved. What else is television-wise? I think that's all performing-wise. Yes, and some emceeing and speaking gigs and things like that. Yeah.
Also, I just wanted to ask you, you were New Zealander of the Year in 2020. and you were just named New Zealand of the Year and we went all in lockdown. How did that feel?
Well, that was tough in that, aside from that lovely honour, all of my work just tumbled, you know, down like a set of dominoes. And, yeah, so that was a little daunting at the time. But I went for a walk and reminded myself that, you know, an actor's life is always somewhat, you know, you never quite know what's going to happen. So we are quite resilient. I mean, I suppose I was most sad because at that time, for that year, I really wanted to focus on the Actors Benevolent Fund, which is a wonderful charity supporting actors because we're all freelancers. We don't have any of the benefits of permanent of employees, KiwiSaver. I mean, you can do it yourself, of course, but, you know, there's no one paying our KiwiSaver or ACC or whatever, you know. So there are usually no, you know, parachutes for actors. So if you got ill or you were undergoing treatment or something like that, which meant you couldn't work, you'd be able to apply to the Actors Benevolent Fund for some funds. And we're still in the kind of gathering funds stage, so I really wanted to use that time of my year as New Zealand Year to promote that. But of course, that wasn't good timing. And I didn't want to talk about that when we were in a pandemic, you know, yeah. And people were dying potentially. So, but, you know, it's a very wonderful honour. And I particularly used it when I'm advocating for other arts entities or events. So, you know, that's useful to give mana to other events.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Jennifer. This has been really interesting. I've learned a lot about artists and about the challenges that artists have to face. And I'm glad that you are helping them to put their energy in what they really want to do in performing and in playing the character role. So thank you for all that work. It's amazing. Thank you.
Thank you, Beata. It's very gratifying.
And just a couple of things for Titi Ponamo Study and Joy. So we have two sessions on the first week of July. Monday, the 4th of July, I will give a presentation on Matariki and the Pleiades, stories and legends from around the world from 7 to 8.30 p.m. And on Friday, the 8th of July, 7 to 8.30, stories, films, and the Bible with Father Kevin Waldi. And for more information and registration, please check out the website www.studyjoy.nz. Kia kaha and keep safe. And thank you very much, Jennifer.
Kia ora, tēnā koe, Beata.
The new day dawning and shines a light to greet. We're singing, this is the day when the hope is calling. This is the day when the light did shine. This is the day when the world can say, can you hear the cry for the wounds to be healed? Can you hear the call for this light to reveal? Oh, a vision of hope and peace for the tears in